Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Now the man who knows more about your nose than anyone in the world, I think, Dr. Alan Hirsch is with us. Dr. Hirsch, good to be with you again. I don't think I've had a chance to talk to you since we had you on our old Fox Thing in the Morning television show. It's been a while.
Oh, it has, and thank you so much for having me back.
Dr. Hirsch is the Neurological Director of the Smell and Taste Research and Treatment Foundation here in Chicago. He's an assistant professor at Rush Presbyterian St. Luke's Medical Center. Let me start by asking you about how we kind of lose our sense of smell as we get older. I know every time my wife or one of my kids says, hey, smell this, I think it's spoiled. And I don't smell anything, but they do. What happens to us, Doctor?
Well, you're exactly right. As we age, our sense of smell drops down. About half of people over the age of 65 and three-fourths of people over the age of 80 have a reduced ability to smell. And so what happens is, as a result of this reduced ability to smell, we tend to use more salt to give food flavor, and so it increases our salt load and increases our hypertension, which may explain why, as you get older, you have greater hypertension. But there's a number of reasons why people lose their sense of smell as they age. Part of it has to do is they have more diseases that all impact upon one's sense of smell. In addition to that, they also take a number of different medications. For instance, they can impair sense of smell, whether it be antibiotics or drugs that are used for cholesterol, and as well as the drugs that are often used for inflammation. So all of these can impair one's sense of smell. On top of that, we're exposed to more toxins as we age. So not only cigarette smoke, which can impair sense of smell, but ambient toxins, particulates, for instance, can all impair ability to smell. And on top of all that, through the vicissitudes of life, we have more head trauma. And with head trauma, even minor head trauma is enough to cause smell loss. And beyond all that, most of our population has been exposed to COVID. And COVID can cause loss of sense of smell. About 5% of the people who develop COVID lose their sense of smell. And about half of those, the smell may only come back very marginally. So we see smell loss, and with recurrent COVID infections, the smell loss gets more and more intense.
Yeah. At age 60, about half of all of us have a reduced ability to smell. I read once that your sense of smell is sharpest in warm, humid environments, like when you come out of the shower. Is there any truth to that?
Exactly right. So your sense of smell will fluctuate depending upon the humidity. So when it's warmer and very humid, your sense of smell will improve. So when you're in the shower, your sense of smell is actually far better than at other times. And in the summertime, your sense of smell is better than in the wintertime. So as a result, in the summer, you're able to detect flowers, whereas in the wintertime, the same flowers, even if they were out there, would have much less of perceived smell. And not only that, the time of day impacts upon your sense of smell. So in the morning, when you first get up, your sense of smell is far better than the end of the day. When you eat, your sense of smell drops down. So that's how come right before your meal, your sense of smell is best. So when you're tasting appetizers, it tastes better than the main course because your sense of smell is that much better. About 90% of what we call taste is really smell. So if you hold your nose and eat chocolate, it tastes just like chalk. It has no taste at all. Because when we speak about taste, we're really talking about flavor, which is a combination of smell and taste. And it's really smell. That's why you see little kids, and if they have to eat spinach, what they'll do is they'll hold their nose to eat it. So that doesn't give them the smell of it, and the taste less awful.
I love these things that you come up with, Dr. Hirsch, and now I remember why we used to want you on our television show all the time. Don't people use coffee beans to kind of clear their palate? I mean, isn't like the perfume industry, people who work with perfume, when they want to clear their head when they're sampling scents, Don't they use coffee beans to do that?
Well, that's right. Historically, there's different. If you take an odor and you give a different odor right afterwards, it allows those receptor sites to open up more. So if you smell a perfume, and then afterwards, if you smell some coffee beans and then go back to the next perfume, you'll have a little bit better ability to detect the next odor. But the reality is that what happens is that our receptor sites, especially as we get older, they get bound by those odors, and they don't come off so quickly. And there's not as many of them there. And so what happens is when you first smell a perfume, you'll detect it. And then later on, you don't. So have you ever gone into an elevator where there's somebody who's very old in their 80s or 90s and their senses, and you go in there and there's a strong aroma of perfume or cologne? It's because they themselves can't detect it anymore because they do not adapt to it, or they adapt so quickly, whereas you detect it immediately and say, oh my goodness, too strong. So as you get older, you tend to use more smells because you can't detect an aroma's present.
Mm-hmm. The sense of smell, it's so strong, isn't it? We all have these memories of how maybe our grandparents' house smelled. It is really a strong sense, isn't it?
You're exactly right. We looked at something called olfactory evoked nostalgia. We'll smell a smell, and suddenly you have a vivid memory of your childhood. We looked at 989 people from 45 states and 39 countries, looking at what odors made them nostalgic for their childhood. And for instance, in the United States, the smell of flowers made people nostalgic for their childhood, but also depend upon where they grew up and when they grew up. So if they grew up on the East Coast, the smell of flowers was number one. In the Midwest, it was the smell of farm animals. In the South, it was the smell of fresh air. And in the West Coast, it was the smell of meat barbecuing. So the idea is that where you grew up impacts upon what odors make you nostalgic, but also when you were born. So people, the older the person is, the more likely that natural smells will make them nostalgic for their childhood. Trees, hay, horses, pines, meadows, that sort of thing. Whereas when you're younger, more artificial odors made them nostalgic for their childhood. Play-Doh, Pez, sweet tarts, vapor rub, even jet fuel. Huh. So we saw this gradual decrement of nostalgia for nature and a gradual increment of nostalgia for man-made chemicals. And why this is so important is if part of why people get involved in political movements, let's say, in the environment, is because of their emotional commitment to it, and part of it has to do with nostalgia, well, what that suggests is that future generations will be far less interested in the environment because they don't have the same nostalgia for nature.
So interesting. Yeah, you can wax poetic and nostalgic over farm animals. And then you mentioned the smell of flowers. People can smell like a rose fragrance long after they stop being able to detect other smells, can't they?
Well, you're exactly right. This phenomenon is something we've looked at for a long time, the idea of adaptation. So, for instance, you get a first sense of a smell, and then after a whiff or two, you lose that sense of smell. And as you get older, you rapidly adapt to the odor. Well, with rose smells and with some other smells, you don't adapt so quickly. For instance, ammonia. You'll smell it, and you'll keep, even though you smell it once, you'll continue to experience it as the odor is reintroduced. With natural gas smell, as you get older, you can't detect that odor so much, and so they're more likely to be involved in a gas explosion. And so it's important, as you get older, to have gas detectors, for instance.
Dr. Alan Hirsch, neurologist and psychiatrist who specializes in the treatment of smell and taste loss. And we were talking about how as we age, our sense of smell diminishes. I thought that if you, for example, smell before you sip coffee or tea, or smell before you eat food, you can actually enhance your sense of smell. Will that work even as you get older?
Well, it won't truly enhance your sense of smell, but yes, it will enhance the perceived flavor of the food, absolutely. So if you want the food to have greater flavor, sniff it before you eat it, and it'll enhance you'll perceive it more than it actually is. You know, some foods are like coffee and chocolate are almost all smell and no taste. So if you hold your nose and eat chocolate ice cream and vanilla ice cream, they'll taste identical. Or if you hold your nose and eat an apple and an onion, they taste the same. So when we say taste, we usually just mean smell. And even if you look at coffee, if you hold the nose and drink coffee, it tastes horribly bitter, and that's all. And so the what we perceive of the flavors and what we like about coffee is not the taste, it's really the smell of the coffee.
So interesting. I love this stuff. All right, now let's get to your ice cream study, and I'm especially fascinated by what you found regarding romantic relationships and different flavors of ice cream. What was the big takeaway here, Doctor?
Well, we did this because we found that after people have head trauma, they lose their sense of smell, they also had changes in their personality. So the idea came up that there's some sort of connection between smell and food flavor preferences and personality. And so what we did is we looked at 18,631 people, and we gave them all sorts of different psychological tests, the MMPI, the MCMI, the Beck, the Zung, and we determined personality type. And then we looked at food preferences, and we found there was a correlation between food preference and personality, sort of like a Rorschach test. You see those butterfly, or you see inkblot and say it's a butterfly or a bat. Depending on how you interpret it, you can gain insight into their personality. We did the same with ice cream preferences. So let me give you an example. Which of these six ice creams do you like the most? Here's your choices. Vanilla, double chocolate chunk, strawberry and cream, banana cream pie, chocolate chip, or butter pecan?
Double chocolate chunk, I would say.
Okay. Well, people who like double chocolate chunk tend to be very lively, crave attention, they're well-dressed, theatrical, and they tend to be very social individuals, and they're most romantically compatible with people who like strawberries and cream. Now, people who like vanilla, you think, well, vanilla would be a blah vanilla personality. We found just the opposite. People who like vanilla are lively, energetic, the life of the party. And they're also most romantically compatible with others who like vanilla. Now, the way we figured out romantic compatibility is we looked at their marital partner and saw what foods they liked, and we were able to correlate them together. So, for instance, if you like banana cream pie, you tend to be somebody who's universal romantic. You're empathic, understanding, easygoing, and compatible with everybody. People who like chocolate chip tend to be much more aggressive, achievement-oriented individuals who are most compatible with those who like butter pecan. And people who like butter pecan are very perfectionists. They tend to make sure that everything gets done. They're very orderly and don't tend to violate the rules. Mm-hmm. Those who like strawberry and cream, for instance, on the other hand, tend to be irritable, cranky pessimists. So you can do the same thing with not only ice creams, you can do with all sorts of foods. Because the idea of the question is, why do we choose one type of ice cream over another? Why do we choose one food over another? Why do we choose what color tie to wear or what color car to drive in? Well, part of it has to do with our underlying personality. And the same way we were able to look at Rorschach tests and use that to determine personality type, you can use food preferences. So basically what you can do is you can look at what someone orders on the menu, and then based on that, you can get an idea of what their underlying personality is like.
In your survey, did anyone admit that they eat ice cream directly from a carton?
People did not admit to that. It's funny because I suspected that people are not fully truthful in the different survey types.
I'll bet. And one more quick thing here to feel better. Is it true that the lavender is the scent to use to relax?
When we looked at EEG frequency analysis of different odors, we found that lavender tends to increase alpha waves in the back of the head, which is associated with a more relaxed state, whereas jasmine increases beta waves in the front of the head, which makes people more awake and alert. Mm. But this is only true if you like it. If you dislike the odors, it doesn't have that same effect. For instance, it could be that you associate an odor with a negative experience, and then you re-experience that negative feeling when the odor is reintroduced.
All right, guys, pipe in some lavender and jasmine in the studio immediately. Dr. Alan Hirsch, we need to get you on again. He's here in Chicago at the Neurological Smell and Taste Research and Treatment Foundation. That's what it is. All right, sniff it before you eat it. That's my takeaway from this. Dr. Hirsch, good to be with you again. Thank you.
Thank you so much.